A playlist original.
Coming soon.
Coming soon.
Coming soon.
Coming soon.
Coming soon.
Coming soon.
Coming soon
to video.
Coming soon to 4K Blu-ray. A playlist original. This is the Films at Home podcast, your source for everything home entertainment.
Hey everyone, Jeff here from Films at Home. Thanks for coming back to the Films at Home podcast today. Whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on your favorite podcast audio apps, I appreciate all the support. Today we've got a great guest. I've got Mark from the YouTube channel Tales from the Shelf. Now, Mark is a physical media enthusiast. He has books, vinyl, CDs, movies, you know, you name it. He collects all sorts of media. He's also a big horror movie fan like myself. So we talk about that topic and like why horror seems to be like a big, huge part of the collector community. All these boutique labels that do horror and all the other stuff, statues, posters, vinyl, all these things that people collect in the horror world. And we also talk just about like collector mentality and like why you'd upgrade from Blu-ray to 4K and how he makes those decisions and, you know, how he's curated his collection a little bit in the past few months. And we talk about the community here online and starting a YouTube channel in this space. So if you're curious about that and maybe getting started creating content, this would be a great conversation as well. So Mark's a great guy, had a ton of fun with this conversation. I think you guys will really enjoy it. So sit back, relax, enjoy the interview, and I'll talk to you at the end. All right, everyone, here's our interview. I've got Mark here from Tales from the Shelf. Mark, thanks for joining today. Super appreciate you taking the time and coming on here to chat some movies and collecting and horror and all the stuff that I love and you love. So I want to give a little introduction, who you are, what you're all about, where people can find you.
Sure. My name is Mark. You can find me on Instagram and YouTube at Tales from the Shelf. And relatively new to the YouTube space, but I've been on Instagram for about since 2019, I want to say. And I mostly just use it as sort of like a blog, really, where I chronicle my collection. I pretty much anything I buy, be it vinyl, VHS, or Blu-rays, I post it all there. So you can follow me on there. And then on YouTube, I'm still trying to find out really where I fall in the niche. I've been trying a lot of different stuff. I've done some video essays where I talk about underrated movies. I've done a movie review here and there, but yeah, for the most part, just been doing like random stuff. I have like these thought experiment videos where I just kind of talk about like something that's been on my mind and I feel like I have something to like add to the conversation. So I do some stuff like that, just kind of just figuring out what I like to do and what works and what doesn't. So
I hear you. That's the YouTube thing, right? You get to sort of try stuff, experiment, find your niche. But I've been following you on Instagram probably since you started or very early on, because I thought it was interesting. Like a lot of people just collect, like, you know, a lot of people just collect movies, or, you know, they just do one thing. And like you are physical media across the line. It's like books, vinyl, movies, like you name it. You're into all of that, which I think is super cool.
Yeah, this room is like full of stuff. You can't really tell from where the camera's positioned, but I am like at capacity. So, but something that you've talked about recently is the process of curating, which has spoken heavily to me. So I'm constantly in a process of like taking things off the shelf and saying, do I really need this? And, you know, I've been selling stuff on eBay. I've donated to Goodwill and all for in the name of making room for more stuff, which has been very good.
Yeah, I mean, what are you looking at for numbers right now? Do you know roughly how many things you have?
So as far as Blu-ray and 4K, I think I've got around 1,000 titles, which is like right where I think I want to be at any given time. Not to throw like an arbitrary number on it, but for my space and what I feel like I need, definitely around 1,000 to like 1,200 titles is really what I'm working with.
It's good to put a number on it. Just, you know, like you said, it's kind of an arbitrary number, but just to know, like, for your space, like I've said that too, like my previous space, I had less space, I have a little more space now, and I'm at like that 2,000, 2,500 is like the top end. And when I hit that, I'm like, okay, time to purge. Like, you have to. Otherwise you just end up with the stacks, and I'm sure everybody can relate, but you know, you get stacks on top of shelves and you get stacks on the floor and you're like, it just becomes kind of a burden, which is never fun. Like, you don't want your collection to ever become a burden. So I'm glad that resonated, but, you know, I'm glad you're doing it too. I don't know. I mean, have you felt better about it? Because I know that was sort of my big revelation, was I had been collecting for 7, 8, maybe even 9 years, like pretty hardcore, before I ever did that. And now I feel so much better about what I have.
Yeah, it's funny. I've always been like a movie guy, like my whole life. We watched like VHS tapes, you know, as a kid, and we had a ton that were all like, you know, ripped from the TV and whatnot. But it wasn't until 2018 that I really started making it a priority to like collect the movies that I love. I started getting involved more on Instagram and like Facebook groups and like stuff like that. And that's when I even became aware of labels like Criterion and Arrow and Scream and all that stuff. So in those early days, I was like going to Dollar General, and like if it was a movie that had an actor I knew in it and had like decent reviews on like IMDb, for whatever reason, I thought IMDb was something to look at, I would just buy it. And I wanted to just have a large collection. And I found that in the past months and years, I've been slowly getting rid of those titles, which are all coincidentally the same ones that I would get from places like Dollar General, like Big Lots, stuff like that. But yeah, it's good. It's like I look at stuff and just to use an example, I had like the 2 Tomb Raider movies with Angelina Jolie. And I'm like, I have not watched these one time since I bought them.
Yeah,
they're fine movies, I guess, but like, I don't need these, you know, I'm never going to be in the mood to watch these. So like just stuff like that is like good examples of stuff that you could probably just, you know, kick to the curb, really.
Yeah, that's sort of the way I approached it, too. And I definitely felt the same way, like, you know, when Dollar Tree had dollar Blu-rays and I was just like, well, I'm buying every single one they have just because they're a dollar. Yeah. And then, you know, a year later, they're just collecting dust. It's like, I don't really, you know, 90% of them I don't care about. So, and I kind of did the same process you did, like, you know, just go movie by movie. Like, am I going to watch, I sort of asked, like, am I going to watch this? And also like, is this something that's probably going to be pretty widely available? Like Tomb Raider with Angelina Jolie. Like, I can never imagine a world where like that would be too hard to find again if I wanted it. So yeah, I mean, kick it to the curb, but, yeah, I donated a bunch, sold a bunch, bought new stuff, of course, with what I sold, which is
that's the end goal, right?
Yeah.
Just, I mean, kind of rotate stuff in and get stuff out. Like,
I mean, always. I think that's for every collection, like whatever you're collecting, like eventually you're going to trade stuff in, sell stuff, donate stuff, and like buy new stuff, or buy, you know, your interests change too. I think that's what people forget. Like the stuff you collected in, you know, I picked up in 2014 is not the same stuff I'm passionate about now. So like, you got to do that turnover. I don't know if you felt the same way, but like definitely even year by year, like your interests change, you find new directors, or, you know, your style changes.
Yeah. Yeah. I would like, I got like more into like Italian horror. So like, I would start to look out for, I mean, I'm wearing my Phenomena shirt from Dario Argento right now.
Yeah.
So like if I see a label has like Kino Lorber, every time they have a sale, I always look for the Mario Bava directed films. And I've got like 8 or 9 of them now, just because I love his movies. And it's always a fun little discovery when you get to watch one of those like for the first time. So I've got a ton of Mario Bava movies that I've gotten that way, just because I know he's in that genre. So like I've bought movies just because I know they play in that sandbox. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So are you big into the Argento and the Arrow video releases that they've put out? And
yeah,
I mean, do you get into like the Fulci stuff too?
Yeah, I don't have as much Fulci still, because he's more like Blue Underground, I want to say. And I think that's mostly where his titles live. But definitely have all the Argentos, minus the Four Flies on Grey Velvet that I think Severin did. I still need to pick that one up. But I've got all his pre-90s stuff, which is the stuff that is worth having, I think. I haven't delved too much into the 90s era Argento, but from what I hear, it's a case of diminishing returns. So
I think that's fair to say. Yeah. The older stuff is better, and that's maybe sometimes that's cliche. Everybody wants the old stuff, right? But like that's true.
There's a reason it's cliche, you know?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. That stuff is way better, but there's been a ton of his stuff recently, which has been a lot of fun, on 4K too, which is cool. But I mean, your collection, I mean, are you, I think you're primarily horror, but do you kind of expand out into, you know, what are some of your sub genres or things outside of horror that you kind of like?
I've been getting more into like noir stuff. Again, with Kino Lorber's help, I've been discovering a lot of titles like that. But I really like all kinds of genres. I wouldn't say that, like, obviously horror is number one, and then really anything could take that second spot on any given day. So, yeah, I mean, I honestly, it sounds funny. I love, like, romance films, like movies like Before Sunrise, Her with Joaquin Phoenix, Portrait of a Lady on Fire. I really like movies like that, too, as well. So, yeah, I don't know what my second favorite genre would be, really. Just depends on what mood I'm in. You know, I'm very spontaneous when it comes to, like, watching stuff. I'll, like, stand in front of the shelf for, like, 45 minutes trying to pick something just because I don't know. Man. I feel like that's a universal thing, though. Everybody does that, right?
That is the struggle when you have, when you have a collection that's anything more than, like, 100 movies even. It's like, all right, I want to watch something, and you come down here and you just get, I get like collection paralysis at times. I'm spinning shelves and like going through stuff, and I'm just staring at spines and like not even reading them. I'm just like lost in that world. Totally get that, which is, it's funny because I have so many, and then like usually gets so overwhelmed that I'm like, all right, I'm just going to pick one of my favorites again and rewatch it.
That's the trap I try not to fall into, where it's like, I know I've got other stuff that I need to watch, like big blind spots and like my film, like movies that I haven't seen, but I own. So there's no excuse for me to not watch them. But then I feel like that's like a whole, I have to like adjust my mindset and like really focus on the movie, 'cause I know it's going to be important and it's probably very good. And that's why I've put it off. So it's this whole thing. I'm just like, yeah, screw all that. I'll just watch, I couldn't even think of an example right now. I'll just watch Can't Hardly Wait again, because that's a movie I don't have to use my brain for. You know, I'll just.
That is a great movie.
Yeah, it's great, right? I mean, you don't have to think about it. You just put it on and it's great.
Yeah. So, I mean, what are some of the recent releases, like things that you've been really excited about? What have you been watching recently? Any shout outs for underrated movies? I know you mentioned you do those underrated movie kind of breakdowns, and I'd love to get some new movies to watch.
So honestly, this year in particular has been pretty light on like releases that I feel like I need to get out to Best Buy on Tuesday, like, and pick up that day. Part of it has come from like a budgeting standpoint, just trying not to spend as much money on physical media. But obviously, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre was a big one that I felt pretty obligated to pick up.
Yep.
So I got that. And then this isn't new per se, but I also got Texas Chainsaw 2 from Vinegar.
Oh, that one's great.
Yeah. I mean, like, this was something that, you know, I knew I had to have. I also picked up Cool Hand Luke recently. That's probably the newest release I've gotten, honestly. Yeah, I've been a little bit behind the times, but I also just haven't felt like, I look at Blu-ray.com every day, and or at least once a week, and I look at what the upcoming releases are, and I'm like,
sure.
So far, anyway, it's been the case. I'm sure it'll pick up as the year progresses, but as it sits, nothing that I've raced out to the store for. As far as like the underrated movies that I've talked about, they're all movies that people mostly know. Like People Under the Stairs, I did a little video essay on. I did one on Sleepwalkers from 1992. It's the Stephen King weird like cat movie. That's one that I think people should go back to, because I feel like that's a movie people haven't watched in a long time, and they just remember it as being really weird. And I think it's worth going back to for sure. But yeah.
Okay. So yeah, did you see that People Under the Stairs is getting a 4K?
I did. Yeah. And I had literally just upgraded my, I guess it's the studio release Blu-ray to the Scream Factory Blu-ray, like a couple weeks prior to the 4K announcement, which is just the way it goes, you know.
So that's good. So you, You're the one who sacrificed that we could get the 4K.
I'm the sacrificial lamb.
There always has to be somebody who buys, you know, the Scream or like the Criterion Blu-ray 2 weeks before they announce the 4K. That's just how it works. That's you the know, physical media gods at work.
Yeah, it's fine. I don't know if I'll get the 4K again. Maybe I'll wait for like a sale or something like that. But the Blu-ray's good. It's got all the special
features. It's really good. Yeah, I have that too. And honestly, I wonder how you feel about this, because for horror movies specifically, unless it's like top tier stuff like Texas Chainsaw or, well, for me, The Exorcist 3 is top tier stuff because I love that movie. But a lot of the stuff that's out there horror wise, I haven't like rushed out to upgrade just because I feel like the horror movies are more. It's more about like the experience than like the vi- like I don't really need, I feel like need 4K a lot of times to, because that movie is not, it's not always the visual experience, and there are a few that are, but it's like, it's just the experience of watching it and like the aesthetics of it sometimes can get almost lost with 4K. Like, I don't know how you felt about like Texas Chainsaw Massacre is not bad, but I watched the Second Sight one and I was like, it's almost like too clean. Like, I almost don't like it this clean because I want it to be like gritty, like gross, like it's supposed to be.
Right. Well, yeah, no, I feel like pretty much the same way, man. And not even just with horror most of the time. And that's where your channel is so helpful to me a lot of the time, is if it's a movie that I'm considering getting, you are helpful in that you always provide examples for if you should buy it or if you're good with the Blu-ray. And that's something that I think is such a valuable resource, and it's something that I use all the time. But in the case of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I had like the Blu-ray Steelbook. Do you know the one with the?
Yep.
Yeah, it's like the one probably everybody's got. It's like beige, I think.
But, yeah, like orangey beige.
Yeah. I had that very early on in my collection days. So the way I look at it, if it's been a while since I've spent money on this movie, I'd be good with buying a 4K of it, right? Because it's been so long.
Yeah.
So, and I was like, it's Texas Chainsaw, so like, I'll buy it, whatever. But yeah, man, I haven't seen that Second Sight copy because I don't have it, and that's a lot of the conversation surrounding that when there's like two labels doing a release. Is it's like, oh well, this one's going to be better because they're doing more work, and I'm like, yeah, but is that really like a good thing? Specifically, right, in the case of Texas Chainsaw, because like you said, that movie is not supposed to look any other way than the way that it's intended to look, which is gritty and grimy and hot and miserable.
Right.
So when you lose that, yeah, no, I 100% agree. And that's why I like to watch movies on VHS a lot of the time, specifically certain horror movies like Blair Witch Project is one that looks great on VHS. You know, I think it adds to the experience. So as great as a 4K of Blair Witch would be, I don't even know that it would necessarily top a VHS viewing of it, you know? So it's a case-by-case basis for sure. Certain, like, Italian horror, like Dario Argento, Suspiria and Inferno, and some other, like Mario Bava, like Blood and Black Lace, very colorful, like Technicolor movies. Those are movies that benefit from HDR.
Right.
Like, Texas Chainsaw is not a very colorful movie. So I really do think it's like a case-by-case basis a lot of the time.
Yeah, and I think that's why, I don't know if you, I'd love to hear your opinion, because you get into VHS stuff, which is something I, as a horror fan, I haven't dove back into yet, but I understand why. And I think it is like that, there's nostalgia, but it's also like the aesthetic of the VHS horror. Like it is supposed to be something almost like, it can't be too pretty. You can't pretty up some of these movies. And like, yeah, I don't know that I'd want to watch a 4K copy of Blair Witch, because it's like, it's literally supposed to have been recorded on a like camcorder on a VHS tape. Like that is how it's shot. So,
you know,
like cleaning it up too far. Like I go back and forth, because there's like that high end home theater guy in me who's like, oh, I want the best. But there's also that fan in me who's like, I don't know. Like even with a movie like Halloween that I love, the original, I go back and forth. I have like every release of that. I've got the multiple Blu-rays. I've got both of the 4Ks because they had multiple 4K transfers, the Lionsgate one, the Scream Factory one. I go back and forth, and it's like it kind of depends on which one I'm in the mood for. It's almost like on a, you know, on a late October night, I'm like, I kind of want the gritty one. I kind of almost want to watch this on DVD or VHS. Yeah. But like, I don't know, maybe in the middle of the summer, if I'm just looking for a fun movie to show, you know, I'll put on the higher quality, the 4K. It's a weird thing to go back and forth on, which I do think is why a lot of people haven't like fully embraced that format yet of 4K.
Yeah, I think the more popular a movie seems to be, it seems like there's more options of how to watch it.
Yeah.
Which can be good and bad, like we're talking about here. Yeah, Halloween's the movie I own the most copies of, just because that's, in my eyes, the greatest horror film ever made. Certainly traumatized me as a child.
Yep.
And it's I have the Lionsgate steelbook, which is gorgeous. I think it's Lionsgate. It's the one with like the fall leaves on it. It's like the, you know the one. I've got the Scream Factory. I've got the 35 mm-hmm. anniversary Blu-ray. I have a Blockbuster VHS right here, actually. Let me see if I can grab it real quick.
That's the same one that I have. Yeah. It's like the, when Blockbuster was like doing VHS tapes on their own label.
Yeah. Sometimes I'll feel like popping this in, you know, it's like,
right.
If I want that like analog kind of experience. So yeah, I guess mood is a big part of it and just like what you're going for. But like Halloween is like, that lends itself fine to 4K, I think, but that one's like sort of on the fence a little bit because again, not a very colorful movie, but I think once you reach a certain point with it, you shouldn't really touch it anymore. But I understand the temptation to do so because anytime you do release Halloween or Texas Chainsaw, it will sell and people will buy it.
Right. So. Right. Well, and that's horror collectors, which is something I did want to ask too. Like I don't know what it is, because I'm one of those guys too, who's like horror first. I feel like we buy everything. Like I have the vinyl soundtracks for all of the new Halloween movies, and I have all the new releases, and I have a ton of different vinyl. I have a ton of different books. I have all the Stephen King books because I'm a New England guy and I love Stephen King.
Yeah.
I grab everything horror. I bought a Michael Myers like action figure from Fright Rags the other day just because I was like, I need it. It has to go in my collection. I have the masks. I have the busts. I have like, it just goes so over the top that I don't have for any other genre. And I've never been able to just be like, why? Because the horror community specifically is so, we have more of that than anybody else. Like nobody is, you know, yeah, you can buy like a Darth Vader helmet at like Target or something, but like there's no other movies where like people are buying Art the Clown busts and masks, which is this tiny little low budget horror movie that has just blown up. Like you don't get that for some indie, you know, action movie. It just doesn't happen. So I've always thought it's super interesting, and like the cons and everything, and you know, just how huge it is. Like, why do you think that is? Like, what was it for you that made you kind of just become a collector?
It's hard to kind of put a finger on what it is specifically. I think it's a culmination of things that happen throughout our lifetime. But like, yeah, like you're saying, like there is no, like, there's no like comedy conventions, but like I've been to several horror conventions.
Right.
And, you know, maybe they have like sci-fi conventions and action movie conventions, but none of that seems as prevalent as like a horror convention. And I don't know if you've ever had the chance to go to one, but I go to this one in Cherry Hill over here in New Jersey, Monster Mania, which is huge. I mean, parking is insane. People bring their families.
Yeah,
it's crazy, and people are all wearing crazy elaborate costumes, and you get to meet, like, I've gotten to meet some really, I met Chris Sarandon from Fright Night, plays Jerry Dandridge. I've met tons of, like, I've gotten Blu-rays signed. It's really, really cool, and yeah, you just don't get that culture for other people or other genres, and yeah, I don't know specifically what does it, but it's certainly something that has something to think about. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I've been thinking, and that's, I always ask people, and I'm just like, I don't have a real good answer either, but
you know, it's
just
hard.
Like it's a strong community. I think part of us too is like the horror thing is just so like, that's just like a part of human nature. And like life is like, I don't know, horrible things happen sometimes in life. So how do we deal with them? We like exaggerate them and watch them on film. And like, it's just like this human nature.
Yeah. Type,
you know, it's something in your brain where you're like, that's how some people deal with like, you know, horrible stuff that can happen. And those horrible, you know, you watch the news every day and it's like worse than any horror movie that's out there.
Oh my gosh, like, you're so right.
You know, oh, okay, this family got, you know, wiped out and this guy died and this person's killed and, you know,
yeah,
the world's collapsing. And it's like, okay, I think I'm going to go watch something that shuts my mind off, but yeah, is actually less scary than the real world.
I just saw Ari Aster's new film, Bo is Afraid, on Monday night. Okay. And that's not a horror movie per se, but there's horrific elements to it. And the whole thing is just this anxiety ridden, you know, 3-hour nightmare. Right. Mm-hmm. And my biggest takeaway from it is that I think what Ari Aster gets out of making that movie is the same thing that he wants his audience to get out of it, which is being able to process and kind of come to some sort of catharsis for just like anxiety and like help you like externalize it and make sense of it, which is, which has got to be, yeah, that's probably the biggest takeaway, like you're saying, is whether we realize it or not, watching like horror movies is like our way of, you know, being able to look at a thing and make sense of it and kind of just be like, okay, well, you know, that's what it is, what it is, and it might not be real, but it could be representative of something that is, and just kind of like helps us to come to terms with things. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think it's true. I mean, and if you look at like the slasher genre specifically, it's always reflective of the time period, which I think if you've seen Scream 6, at the beginning, the professor there sort of, that was her whole deal, was like, oh yeah, I study like slashers and how they, you know, mesh with society and what's going on in society at the time. And it's like super, super true. So real. If you go back and look at time, like the horror movies reflect what's going on in society probably better than any other genre. It's just a way to sort of deal with that, deal with change and deal with, you know, these terrible things that may be happening. Like you can really tie it back to everything. Like the whole,
yeah,
there's like the AIDS crisis and then horror movies that came out of that. And there's like post 9/11 horror movies and all like the torture porn stuff. And like, it all ties back to this, different elements throughout time. So I do think that's why it turns some people off, because it's like, oh, it's too much. It's scary. You know, it's gory. I get why it's not for everybody, but it really is almost for everybody. Like everybody's dealing with the stuff that these movies tackle. And I want to see Bo is Afraid so bad, because like I deal with that. Like I've dealt with like anxiety in my life and like just work and like coming up in your 20s, it's like so stressful and like you're just trying to figure shit out and the world's not working with you to help you figure it out.
No, it's like, you know, actively working against you.
Right. So like I feel that, like I've been through that, still going through it. And I do think like that's how he deals with that on his own, is, you know, Hereditary and Midsommar too. Both of those are, you know, Hereditary is like this family drama that just, you wonder what went on in his family to create a movie like that.
He's like, not, he's not okay. I mean, I hope he's doing better now, but he's got something going on. But no, I know you're a big Hereditary fan, so I know you'll probably enjoy this. It is different than his first two movies. Comparatively, those two are a little bit more like by the numbers, which seems like a funny way to describe those two movies, because they're really anything but Bo is Afraid is just so out there. And it's not really doing great at the box office, so I do imagine it'll be like on VOD before too long, so that would probably be a good way to check it out. And then hopefully the Blu-ray is not too long after that, probably in the summertime somewhere. Sorry,
I would imagine that, yeah, given the turnaround now, unless it's a Top Gun Maverick that's printing money or Avatar that's printing money.
Just like, in theaters for like 6 months.
Yeah. I mean, that's what people keep asking me, like, you know, where's Avatar 2? And I'm like, the thing is still printing money. Like they're not going to, there's no reason for them to give us a disc when they probably have, you know, 500 million in digital sales already. Like they're going to milk every avenue from theatrical to like VOD 100%. to then disc. Like we'll get it this summer sometime, I'm sure, but yeah, they're milking everything they can. But yeah, something like Bo is Afraid, I wouldn't be surprised if like by the end of, you know, June, early July, like we have something in hand. And it's such a quick turnaround now, which is, I appreciate it because I can't get to the movies nearly as much as I want to with two kids and it under two. It's just nuts. But like the fact that they come out, like I watched Knock at the Cabin last night and I'm like, I feel like that just came out. Like, wasn't that just in theaters? And like now I'm watching it at my house, which was, it's nice, but I do wonder if it's going to hurt the theatrical side of things. Like, you know, are you still a big theatrical guy? Do you still get out to everything and try to support that? Because I wish I could, and I can't as much. And it's almost like I'm starting not to feel as bad because in 6 weeks I can buy it and watch it at home.
Yeah, I actually had like a scare where there was a time period there where I thought my theater that I've been going to since I was like a kid was going to close. So that was pretty like upsetting. But it turned out they weren't closing, so that's good. So I do feel like I've been making it a point to start going more now. I think I've been to the theater 10 times so far this year, which is pretty good.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I would think so. And I don't go see everything, but things that I do really want to see, I make it a point to go see. Like, there's movies that I'm curious about, like Air, the Michael Jordan movie. I want to see that, but I don't know that it's a theater. Like, I need to go see it in theater. Things like the Mario Brothers movie, like those are things I can wait for VOD, but like Scream 6, I went to see in theaters, Evil Dead Rise, Beau's Afraid, like stuff like that, like the big horror things that I'm like actually excited about. I do make it a point to go see.
Yeah, that's what I miss. Like those are those three, like Scream 6, Evil Dead Rise, Beau's Afraid. Those would have been probably the last three movies I saw in theaters. If I had had the choice, because that experience, I've never had an experience as good as opening night of a horror movie in particular. Even I've been opening night to like Avengers Infinity War, and it just wasn't the same experience as being there opening night for Hereditary when nobody knew what was happening, and the gasp and the silence, and then the just people just losing their minds in the last 20 minutes. And like, dude. And even just watching like the new Halloween movie in 2018, like we haven't had a Halloween movie that was, you know, we hadn't had anything in 10 years. We hadn't had one that was like back to that storyline in 20. People were so hyped to have that back. And then it ended up being like actually pretty good. Like that audience was so hyped, which was awesome. Like, I don't know. I just, you can't talk. I've been to opening night for many, many movies, big movies, Infinity War, all the Avengers movies, like Guardians of the Galaxy 2, like stuff like that. It doesn't touch what like horror fans bring to a theater.
No, yeah, you're 100% right. And there are those occasions where you'll get like a disrespectful audience. And yeah, it does happen. Like my Scream 6 audience was not great. I want to say there was like 5 to 6 teenage girls in there. Just wouldn't stop talking.
That'll ruin the whole thing. Yeah. That's all you need is 4 or 5 of them.
it's few and far between enough to where it's not going to ever stop me from going to the theater. It's just something you got to deal with. My audience for Beau is Afraid was literally just myself. I saw it at 9:40 PM. Didn't leave the theater till like 1 in the morning. And I just drove home like in a daze, like just contemplating what I just watched. So I don't know if that helped or hurt my experience if I had gotten to see that with a crowd. Part of me wanted to, but when you see the movie, you'll understand because there's some funny parts, but you're like, am I supposed to be laughing right now? Like if other people were laughing, maybe that would help me decide if this is weird or not. So yeah, it was interesting.
Yeah, that would have been... You know, I don't know if you get the audience reactions for that must have been odd, because I heard a lot of people were just like, this is the worst movie I've ever seen. This is horrible. I wasted 3 hours. And some people are like, this was one incredible experience, a total trip. Like, this was super cool. I feel like the audiences would have been so split for that. That might have been interesting just to have. But I mean, like you said, it hasn't been doing that well. So good luck getting a full audience for for Foe is Afraid, unfortunately. So you mentioned community and like talking to people about the movie helped you process that movie. That's one thing. I don't know if you found this too, like you got into Instagram, and then into YouTube, but that's honestly a big reason why I started was I felt like I was out on an island, like collecting stuff. And yeah. I've learned so much and expanded my filmography and film knowledge just from being part of a community. I think that's like one of the most underrated aspects of like putting yourself out there, even just posting on Instagram. Like you don't even have to, you know, put your face in front of a camera, but just like posting on Instagram, having a blog, like getting on Letterboxd or YouTube, just anywhere. Like that's been a super cool part of all of this for me. I've learned so much. There are so many. I thought I knew horror movies, right? Like I'm like, oh, I'm a big horror movie guy. Like, yeah, I've seen them all. Like, no, I had seen all the mainstream ones and I haven't seen 5% of, you know, the rest of the world of horror. Like I didn't know who Argento was, you know, right. I'd never heard of, you know, Hammer horror. Like I was just like, yeah, I know Halloween and Nightmare on Elm Street and Friday the 13th. Like I got it down. And this world, it's been eye-opening. So I don't know if you had that same experience, but man, when you get involved in a community, I can't recommend that enough for people. You learn so much.
Yeah, no, 100%. And that is like the biggest benefit, I would say, of all these different like communities that I'm a part of and so many others are a part of, because it really is like dipping your toe in an Olympic sized like swimming pool that you can't see the bottom of. And not even just with horror, but just with films in general, like the amount of movies I've discovered. And it's all because of places like I'm in a Facebook group. Mm-hmm. That was like my introduction to everything. It all kind of spiderwebbed out from that was this Facebook group. I'm in Discord servers. Like Instagram has been huge because there's even labels that I didn't know existed where people will post them. And I'm like, that looks cool. Like, where can I find that? Right. And you discover the movies that are within that label. And it's just, it all just spiderwebs out from each other. And it's great because I'm constantly looking for like new things to watch and discover. And yeah, that's a great part of being in a community where, you know, you could be just browsing Instagram and you look at your stories and somebody posted something and you just shoot them a quick message about it. And then you start a conversation that way and you make friends that way, which is also very cool. So yeah, no, the community aspect is huge because like movies are meant to be like experienced together. I would say to a degree. Sometimes you watch them by yourself, but the conversation around the movies, it should be for everyone. And I think that's the best way to do it.
Yeah. There's supposed to be pieces that create conversation and create, you know, engagement with other people. Like, I totally get what you mean by like, there's definitely movies I want to watch by myself and nobody needs to bother me. But then I am like so anxious to like talk about it afterward, or like I just want to know everything about the movie I just watched too. I do this crazy thing like, okay, I watch a movie, I immediately pull up like IMDb and go to like the trivia page for it and like read all the stuff about like different, you know, behind the scenes stories and all the different little trivia that they have on there. Some of it's super cool, like insightful stuff, but I just like dive deep in for a couple of hours and then I want to talk to people about it. So that's I think it's a super underrated thing. Like if you're out there listening to this, watching to the, you know, this episode and you haven't, it doesn't take much. Like start an Instagram account, start taking pictures of stuff you love. That's all you have to do. People will find you. You'll find people, like, and then you're going to be so much happier for it. Like that's really what triggered me. I collected for like 3 or 4 years before, like seriously collected Blu-ray before I ever got involved. And I'm like, I kick myself for not having gotten involved earlier.
That's very interesting because I can't imagine collecting in a space where you're not also seeing what other people collect, because that can influence you so much. Like pages like, you know, like you and like Mid-Level Media and like Dawn of the Discs, and they're always, you see all these like announcements and stuff.
Yeah.
So I imagine if you're cut off from stuff like that, it'll change the way you collect. But yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah, I was just like buying Denzel Washington movies because I liked him. And then I was just like buying the basics, right? Like I was like, well, got to get Jaws, got to get Star Wars, got to get, you know, just the most Indiana Jones, Back to the Future. Okay, like
all the must-haves.
Yeah, like, all right, I'm good. And then, you know, I'm looking around, I'm like, nobody's buying, like, I don't know anybody else who has Blu-rays. Like nobody's buying this stuff. Nobody's like... So where can I find this? And yeah, I think I found a, I found a Reddit community first, which was super helpful for DVD collection. And that's what triggered me into everything else. I was like, oh, there's dozens of us. Like, I'm not the only, you know, just because I'm the only one at my Walmart who's buying these things doesn't mean I'm not the only person worldwide buying these things.
Sometimes like, it feels that way, though.
It does feel that way. Like, that's the, it can be very isolating if you don't get involved. So I highly recommend it because it is, it's important too to like, you'll be so much better off like finding deals and, you know, being able to stay within your budget better. Like if you don't know what you're doing, you know, you could go out and buy some movie just on Amazon. It'll be like $20, but like at Best Buy, the same movie could be $5. Like it's, you know, if you don't know what you're looking for and what you're doing, yeah, you can waste a lot of money. So that's a big part of it too. Like the whole staying within budget, because I know that's tough.
Yeah, I actually have like a notebook that I started doing this year in the beginning of January. And I write down everything I buy and how much it costs me. And then at the end of the month, I have a total. And it's helped keep me in check with like how much money I spend. Because before I was just kind of like guessing. But now I have like an actual idea. And then at the end of the year, I'll be able to tell someone exactly how much money I spent, which is it's good. It holds me accountable and it helps make sure I'm really spending money on the things that I actually want, which is important.
Yeah. Cause it can get out of control. Like, I don't know if you ever hit that point, but I hit a point.
Yes.
It was sort of, it was like after I found the, you find the community, right? And then the dangerous part about finding the community is now you're like, well, I need to buy everything because look at all this stuff that I don't have. So like, yeah, it was like 2 or 3 years into that. And I was like, oh my God, like I'm spending my lunch break, like making sure I get to a Best Buy and a Target and spending $30-$40 on a new steelbook and just dropping so much money. And at the time I'm like, I'm trying to save money to like buy a condo or like get out of my parents' house. Like it hit me and I was like, okay, I'm doing this wrong. And I started doing something similar to you where I just was like, I'm gonna track it, write it down. And then at the end of the year too, I don't know if you do this, but like I would look back and be like, how many of these that I bought and spent like full price for did I even watch? And that was what triggered me. I was like, oh my God, you know, I spent $500 on movies that I've not even watched yet that I probably could have got for a third of the price if I just waited.
It's an easy trap to fall into, man. And it's something that I wouldn't blame anybody for doing, but you really just got to use your best judgment. And
yeah,
like, it's so easy to like, look at people's posts and their stories and say, yeah, like look at my haul from Scream Factory. And it's like, man, like I want those titles too. And it's like, I don't need to buy Halloween's 2 and 3 on 4K because I have the Blu-rays and maybe one day, but not right now. And it's like just little things you got to, you know, talk to yourself about, you know, despite how good those spines would look next to each other on the shelf.
Yeah.
You just, you don't need them. And that's a big thing that I feel like more people need to talk about is like just normalize not having to feel so obligated to buy these things, like let alone day one, but maybe in just in general, like, and that's again, like just making sure you know who you are when you're going to buy a 4K is so important because if your Blu-ray is good and it seems like it's good for what you want out of the picture and the audio, then just stick with your Blu-ray, you know?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that approach to it because the Blu-ray I love a good 4K disc, but like the Blu-ray format, and I have made a video about this, but I should probably like rehash it. It's just like, it's still such a great format and things can look fantastic, especially if they did have good transfers already on Blu-ray. Like, yeah, 4K, the HDR. Yes. There's some upgrade there, but like a really good Blu-ray disc for a lot of people, it's, you know, it's going to be good enough. And there's also like a lot of people hit me and, you know, I'll talk about a movie or I'll post something and it'll be like, oh, it's only getting a Blu-ray release, right? Like it's not getting a 4K, but it might be a movie that's never been released in HD before. And I'll get these comments and it's like, ah, no buy for me, not 4K. And I'm like, but don't you realize that like this only ever existed on VHS? And the fact that we're now getting even just the Blu-ray is such a big deal. Like we should be, like you, and of course, don't buy everything, but like if you like that movie, this is probably as good as you're getting. So like, you know, just because it's not 4K doesn't mean it's not good. Just because it's not, doesn't have Dolby Atmos doesn't mean it's not good. Like I think a lot of people get kind of hung up on those technical facts, which, yeah, make a difference, but they aren't the deal breaker. And you do just have to be smart. Like, you can buy a Blu-ray for $3 sometimes, like even brand new from Amazon, $3.99. You have to make those decisions for yourself. Like, is it worth another $20 for that experience? Yeah. And that is, I think I try to do that in most of the reviews. And I know, like, hands up, fully understand that, like, I am a proponent of this stuff. And like, I post pictures of things I buy, and I probably do give people that like FOMO, you know, like, I don't know how to not do that, but all I can do is do it and like talk about it and be like, look, you don't have to buy everything I buy. I have different tastes than you. I may have a different budget than you have. You may have a bigger budget than me. You may not. I don't know. You're in a different situation. Like, you have to do what's best for you and your situation. So, you know, I can certainly make recommendations, but I wouldn't want anybody to ever take what I say and be like, well, have to buy this one. It's like, I try to usually caveat with like, if you're a fan of the movie and you enjoy this movie or like this actor, yes, you will really like the 4K, but the Blu-ray will be just as good. Like Knock at the Cabin, which I mentioned that I just watched last night. That 4K was good, but so will the Blu-ray is too. It's a brand new movie. It was, there's not much to that movie. It's a kind of one location. It's not super colorful. It's not like 4K is making a dramatic difference. So whichever one you buy, if you just want to own it, you're going to be fine. Like, I guess that's sneak, you know, spoiler for the review, but that's what I'm going to say, because it really is true. It's one or the other. I mean, if you want to spend the extra $3, go for it. But it's not a, you know, making a huge difference going to 4K there.
Yeah, I feel like, and there's nothing wrong with this inherently, like, spend your money how you like, but I feel like there's a lot of people who, really want to just own the most recent release of something.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a big thing for a lot of people, is just wanting to have the most recent release. And I like to get a little bit more, like, I chop it up a little bit more. I'm like, all right, well, this is not a movie that necessarily lends itself. This is not Blade Runner, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, like 4K doesn't help every movie equally. And I feel like the ceiling on a 4K disc, and you know this probably better than anyone else, can be huge, because sometimes the Blu-ray is super outdated and is in need of one. And the gulf can be huge between the quality. And then sometimes it's just a very marginal, you know, like, I can't imagine the 4K of Knock at the Cabin is like light years ahead of the Blu-ray of Knock at the Cabin.
Yeah, it's not.
Like, it's you just got to think about it, you know, think about what you want to spend and... If you even want the movie to begin with, really, I mean,
that's the other thing. Yeah,
it's such it's such a case by case basis, man.
It is, and that's why I think people, you know, you got to do your research and really look into like you did with the curation. Like, look at your collection. Like, what do you actually care about? Because you will, like, I guarantee you will be so much happier. Like, I know it's hard to get rid of stuff, but when you do it. Yeah. That feeling is actually like surprisingly nice to be like, it's like a burden and just like, okay, this stuff is going somewhere else, or I'm selling it to someone else who does care about it. Like, that part of it's positive too. Like, you're sharing the wealth here. You're going to donate it, sell it. Someone else is going to get enjoyment that cares about it, and you can move on to the next thing. But it's a super important part of all of this that I don't think it's talked about enough. It's just like, be you. Like, everybody's collection is their own. It's an extension of you. Like, we all want to share it, but you definitely don't need to, like, have everything that guy has, or, you know, everyone's unique. That's the kind of cool part about it. That's why I like seeing other people's collections, is less like, oh, I got to buy that big stack they have, and more like, ooh, what's that one in the middle? That looks super interesting. Let me go look that up. And now I've found a new movie I care about. Like, that's why I like it.
Or maybe you didn't know that had a release, but now you do.
Yeah, that happens all the time.
Yeah. And I, again, not knocking anybody who does this, but there's people who will buy every new release on Tuesday. And when you do that, for me, it doesn't really tell me a lot about what you actually like watching. It tells me you like watching everything, apparently. But when you only buy this, or you only buy that, it's just a little more curated, and I find that is more interesting to me anyway. And again, spend your money how you like. If I had, you know, the resources and the budget and the space, I'd probably buy a ton more stuff than I do right now. But it's just a case-by-case basis. You know, that's the biggest takeaway, is just, like, know your situation and just use your best judgment.
Yeah. You know, and you're right. I think there's two different types of collectors. And, I mean, they're both definitely 100% valid. Like you said, like, to each their own. There's, like, Blu-ray collectors who, like you said, like, they buy everything that comes out, and they probably have thousands and thousands of these, and they have, like, every release. And yeah. I was that guy for a long time. Like, that is what I did. And then I just literally ran out of room, and I was like, okay, I need to, like, take a look inside myself here and be like, what do I actually care about? And I shifted, and I really became, and, you know, I guess this, it probably turns some people off because I talk more about horror stuff now than most other genres, but, like, that's where I shifted, and I found, like, that's really where the passion was. So I'm going to shift to, like, really focus more on that stuff. And so naturally, like, the content shifted a bit. I still cover everything I can, but that's just what I found. But I do think there's, like, two different types of collectors. There's, like, the physical media collector who just is, like, need it, like, want it all. And then there's, like, the kind of, like, genre collector or, like label collector. Like, there's people who, like, I just buy Criterion, or I just want all the Arrow or Scream Factory, or, you know, I got to make sure I get all the Vestron video with slip covers. Like, there's, like, two different types of collectors, which is kind of unique in, like, all in the same world. But I think this is true for other hobbies too. Like, there's, you know, I dabble in, like, sports cards a little bit, and there's people who, like, buy every new release and they got to have it. And then there's people who are like, I only like this one product, or I only collect, like, vintage, you know, pre-1970s stuff. And, like, you always, there's niches within the niche, which is kind of neat that I don't think gets explored that often.
Yeah. It's, I imagine it's the same with, like, people who collect books. Like, some, like, I only want, like, if I can get it first pressing hardcover with the original art, like Stephen King's. I don't like the new art. It's, like, glossy and, like, cartoony. Like, so, like, I'll phase out my old ones, and if I can get a new one. So people have preferences as far as, like, what they collect. You see it with VHS. Like, this is probably one of, like, 15 Halloween VHS titles. You know, there's like the media release, which is cool. And there's all these different releases, and maybe you want all of them, or maybe you just want a specific one. Like, for me, this is good. I don't need another, as much as I would like it probably, but I don't need another release of Halloween on VHS, because I don't imagine it looks any different. And I would really just be paying for the cardboard on the
cardboard. So. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Packaging has a lot to do with it, I feel like, because a really nice packaging can make or break somebody's purchase. Like, a Blair Witch, it's a great movie, and it deserves, like, a nicer release than the bare bones, like, Blu-ray that exists.
For sure.
So something like that could even incentivize me to pick something like that up. I think it's owned by Lionsgate. So if they did a Lionsgate, like, steelbook, I think that would be really cool, because those Lionsgate steelbooks have been killing it lately. So, it's all about packaging, like numbered spines. Like, you mentioned Vestron earlier. They're like, oh, well, I have 1, 3, 4, and 5. Well, I need two. I need seven. Yeah. I need six. So it's like, they know what they're doing. These companies know what they're doing. And if that's what you're into, that's what you're into. Like, I'm far be it from me to, you know, I spend my money in ways that I probably don't need to, but that's what we're all here to do.
That's what we all do.
Yeah.
So. We're all spending our money in ways we probably don't need to. It's just that we want to. That's the beauty of it.
This is our hobby. You know, I don't spend money on too many other things. I don't go out very often. Like, I work hard, and this is what I get to, this is what I enjoy. So I imagine it's what everybody else listening to this enjoys. And that's why we're all here. So,
yeah, no, you make a real good point on the packaging though, because you're right. It's not all just like, it's not all just format. Like, we talked Blair Witch, and if they re-released Blair Witch, I don't know if they tried it. They'd probably try to make it a 4K just because that's the newest format, which on its own wouldn't excite me too much. But yeah, if they did like one of those Lionsgate slipcovers and it had you know, they made it look like a, I don't know, like a VHS tape or something that had
that, like, or maybe like the stick figure,
the on sticks. There. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Something like overlaid on top of it with the witch, you know, stick witch. Yeah, like some of that stuff.
I would buy that day one.
Right, that's the thing.
That's one of my favorite horror films. So, like,
yeah, you'd sell me on that.
And you know, if there was no 4K, people would complain about it. Like same with like House of a Thousand Corpses that just came out recently. Like oh, why isn't this a 4K?
Oh, I know.
And I don't know why that. It's not a 4K, but you just know, like, anytime it's not, that's the conversation that surrounds it. Is like, why isn't this like 4K?
But honestly, I watched that. I bought like the box, like the 20th mm-hmm. anniversary box. I didn't get the steelbook. I liked the box set.
The box looks nice.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, like there's people who they're steelbook collectors. They went for that. I grabbed the box, you know, everybody's different, but that box and I watched it and I was like, damn, if you didn't tell me, I don't know if they cleaned it up at all. I don't know if it's at all any different from what I heard. It wasn't, but rewatching it again, and I hadn't seen it in a long time. I mean, it looked fantastic. I mean, I don't know. I just like, if you're missing that one, cause it's not 4K and you haven't, you know, if you like that movie, might be the best we ever get it. Like, I mean, if they were going to do it, they would have done it now for a 20th anniversary. Like they redid all this packaging. So I don't know. That's the tough part too, is like, there's that balance of, you know, do I buy this now or for the 25th, are they going to do a 4K and pull a fast one on me? That's the crazy part of all this too, is like, that's why you have to just buy what you like and buy it based on packaging and not worry so much about like format, but like what do you want in your collection? What's going to look cool on your shelf? What's going to make you appreciate it? Cause like realistically, who knows in 5 years what we're going to be getting. For all I know, they're going to be putting movies on like little micro SD cards and, you know, yeah. They're going to be 8K movies with, you know, or 5 movies, 1 terabyte of data on this little chip that you put into it. Like things could change so much. So like, you know, you just got to buy what you love. That's the end of the day. Like just don't worry too much about all the noise and re-releases and stuff. If you're happy with it, like, you know, you can't get upset that something got re-released. Be happy with what you got, I guess, is the whole point of all of it.
Yeah, like you said, like House of a Thousand Corpses looking good still, and you wouldn't be, and you not knowing if someone had told you it was a 4K and you'd believe them, like that's great. Like, and I actually don't know if Rob Zombie likes the 4K format. I think I've heard that somewhere. So maybe that's got something to do with it. I really don't know.
Totally.
But like, Blu-ray is like the Goldilocks format. Like it's just right. Like it's better than DVD. You know, it can get better, but it's not really needed. And I haven't seen that movie in a while, but is it pretty like colorful? And there's certainly like a spectrum of color, right?
Yeah, I mean it has some moments that are like super colorful that honestly, if you had showed that to me and you told me this was 4K, I would have said, yeah, that's 4K. It looked like there were some moments that I was like, did they, like it looked HDR, like it looked like it had that pop to it, but it didn't. It was a Blu-ray disc. It just looked fantastic. But yeah, there's lots of moments, especially like the Captain Spaulding stuff when they're at the museum. Like there's a lot of great like color there. That's where most of it comes from. When they get to the house, you know, everything kind of gets a little more like Texas Chainsaw at that point. It gets kind of like grimy and dirty and kind of gray, brown, black. But there's some great moments in it for sure. You could have convinced me like that's, and I think that would be true for like, I did it last night with Knock at the Cabin. I was like, all right, I'm gonna put the 4K in. I watched it all in 4K and I put the Blu-ray in just like, all right, let me do some comparisons. How's it look? And I'm like, oh, if my wife had put this in and put the wrong disc in or something, I don't know that you could have, you know, could I have told the difference? I don't know. Cause the TV's 4K, it's doing some, you know, natural upscaling with the player anyway, like
that's something that I think should be mentioned too, is everybody's got probably a different setup too, right? So
yes, which matters a lot.
Your Blu-ray of House of a Thousand Corpses probably could potentially look different than somebody else's.
Oh yeah,
so that's a factor that we haven't mentioned yet, but is very much important and something that's at play for sure.
It's a good point. There are a ton of variables, even down to, I mean, your HDMI cord, your player, your receiver, if you're passing through, you know, video through the receiver, your TV settings, like the way you keep your stuff. I mean, everything is,
if you have light totally in the room, if there's any glare, like all of these things can make a difference.
Yeah. So many factors, which is why it's like, I mean, that's why I say like, you need to look at You can't ever just be like, I listen to this guy's reviews or I read this guy's reviews. Cause like you really need like five or six of them at least, because you need people with different setups. And like maybe you play your discs on an Xbox and not on a $1,000 Panasonic 4K player. Well, you know, find somebody who also does that. Find somebody who has, you know, doesn't have an OLED TV, but has, you know, just an LED 4K TV from, you know, whoever. It all is going to make a difference. Which is important. I actually end up watching a lot of stuff on both OLED and on my TV upstairs, which is just like an LED Sony 4K, and sort of just to get that visual. Upstairs, it's an Xbox and the Sony. Downstairs, it's a, you know, high-end 4K player and an OLED. And I mean, there is a difference there. It's a different experience depending on where you watch it. So that's an interesting point that I don't think it's covered enough too, is like every single person. I talk to a lot of people about setups. I don't know anybody that has the exact setup I have and the exact setup that anybody else has. We all have like different tweaks here or there. So, you know, that's why it's important to get multiple opinions.
Yeah. You might have like the same TV as me, but you might have different speakers, or you might have the same player.
Yeah.
But,
right. It's different room acoustics. It's different lighting. There's a million variables. So, you know, I love doing the reviews, but like, I'll be fully on, like, at the end of the day, like, you sort of have to, you need to look at multiple reviews and watch and read multiple reviews, and then sort of, you know, make your own decisions too. Like, you know, ultimately it's up to you, and you know what you have at your house and what your equipment is.
Yeah. No, you got to take everything with a grain of salt. You know, we all have people that we're fond of and people whose opinions we're going to value higher than others, but at the same time, we still need to recognize, like,
the spectrum.
Just 'cause you are, just because you're like fond of that person doesn't mean everything they say you're going to agree with, and that doesn't make what they say like scripture or anything, which is another easy trap that people can fall into. But
for sure, I watch other people. That's the takeaway. So you don't have to just watch me. I appreciate everybody who watches, but like, there's other people who are doing this too. You know, watch other channels, and that goes back to the whole community thing. Like, if you're only engaging with one channel or one person, you know, you're missing out on, you know, people like this is why I love engaging with like Heath from Serial at Midnight, because he has such different tastes than I have, and our tastes overlap in a lot of ways. But I've discovered, like, I would have never watched The Night of the Hunter if it wasn't for him telling me to go watch it, because it just wasn't on my radar. And it's like, I've discovered so many great things because he has different tastes, and all these other people, like, that's a big reason I do the podcast too. It's honestly just like talk to different people. And like when I talked to Dice K about, you know, movie recommendations, and I went on his channel, he came on here, I was like, I just learned so much. Like, I have so many movies on my list now. It's such a good thing to do, to get like different perspectives from different people.
Yeah. No, it's weird that I'm on it now, but I love this podcast for that very reason. Cause it's like, oh snap. It's like Films at Home and Serial at Midnight. I love both of these guys, and now they're having a conversation with each other, which is like, and then, you know, it's like stuff like that is always super cool.
Now you're part of it. Now you're on here. Now people say, crazy. Oh, geez, Films at Homes and Tales from the Shelf having a conversation. This is going to be good.
Yeah, who'd have thought, right? Definitely not me.
No, this was awesome, though. I appreciate, you know, this is a really good conversation. I think we covered a lot, and like we get into that collector. You know, sometimes on these podcasts, too, I'll be honest, like I get into the weeds and the technical stuff, and we talk to like restoration teams and stuff and get very technical. But like, at the core of it, we're all sort of just like in the hobby and collectors. So I think that was a really cool aspect of this, is like we got kind of just to talk about that.
Yeah.
That part of it all, which I think resonates with a lot of people.
For sure, man. No, I feel like we definitely hit a lot of different bases and things that people will be able to relate to and they understand. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Well, I want people to come find your channel. So again, where can they get you? And we'll link all this in the description as well. If you're listening, it'll be in the audio episode description. If you're on YouTube, you know where to find this stuff. It'll be in the video description, but where can everyone connect with you?
Yeah. Follow me on Tales from the Shelf on Instagram and YouTube. Instagram, I post everything that I buy, which as of late has been a little slow, but you know, you take it when it comes. And then on YouTube, I'm working on a video series right now where it's called Sell It or Shelve It, which is just part of this curation process where I'll take like popular movies off the shelf, ones that I haven't seen, and I'll watch them for the first time, and I'll decide if I want to sell it or shelve it, which has been very fun. And it's provided an incentive for me to start working my way through some of these like classic films. Like I think the next one, this should be out by the time this airs, is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind will be the next one. So, yeah, just look out for that. It's been fun.
All right, cool. So yeah, we'll link all of that. Definitely keep an eye on the new series. I like the sell it or shelve it. Is that what we're going? I like that. That's smart.
Thank you.
That's smart. Yeah, that's a good way to just like do a little retrospective on, like you said, like classic movies and stuff and fill those gaps. Yeah, that's awesome. Well, we'll link all of that. Everyone go check out Mark's channel. Check him out on Instagram. Give him a follow. But yeah, super appreciate you coming on. Appreciate the time. I thought this was a really good conversation. So thank you. And best of luck with everything you're doing with your collection and your channel. And, you know, wishing you all the best.
Appreciate it, Jeff. Thank you very much, man.
All right, everyone. So that was our interview with Mark. Like I said, great guy, super knowledgeable, collector of all things media, horror movie lover, just a really laid back, fun guy to talk to. So I hope you enjoyed the conversation. If you do want to check out Mark and his content, I've linked both his YouTube channel and his Instagram page in the video description on YouTube and on the audio description of all of the podcast apps. So go check him out, support him, tell him Jeff sent you. But if you're enjoying the podcast here on the Films at Home channel, make sure you're subscribed on YouTube and like the video. If you're on Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts, wherever you're at, make sure you follow along. You're subscribed on the audio side. And if you've enjoyed what you've heard so far, I appreciate those 5-star reviews that keep rolling in. That helps the channel grow and give us some more visibility out there on the podcast app. So I appreciate all of that support. But thank you again for coming out for another episode. Next week, we've got a special episode with someone from Vidiots, Sila Reyes. She's the director of marketing over there. If you don't know Vidiots, it's like one of the most legendary video stores like of all time. It's reopening next month, June of 2023, out in the LA area. And it's going to be a huge boon to the community out there in the film community. They got a theater, video rental store, 50,000 titles. We're going to dive into all that. So don't miss next week's episode. And you can make sure you subscribe here so you never miss any of my latest updates. But thank you all for listening. Thank you for watching. Hope you have a great rest of your day. Stay safe and stay healthy out there. And I'll talk to you soon.
Coming soon.
Be sure to subscribe to the Films at Home podcast using your favorite app so you don't miss another episode. And while you're there, don't forget to rate and review this podcast, which helps us out tremendously. You can also help support us by watching our short form content over on YouTube and TikTok by searching Films at Home. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @films_@_home. The intro and outro were created by Elon Osborne. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.